You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back by no one's demand but our own, and from our home office here in the Gulch, in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, it is 615 Sessions, brought to you by A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. Buck Rising here with you, getting ready to kick off our NFL draft coverage as the week that we've all been anticipating, the week that we have all been anxiously awaiting, has finally arrived. And we've got a bunch of cool stuff for you to check out at A to Z Sports and A to Z Sports Nashville.com. Make sure you're liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Buck Rising on Twitter, at Buck underscore Rising on Insta, if you would like to troll me in either place. The Nashville Predators have just been eliminated by the Dallas Stars as we are taping this on Monday evening, 2-1 in overtime. The Preds fall to Dallas. The Preds season comes to a disappointing end. And we will do a post-mortem at some point, but not tonight, as we will be talking about NFL draft coverage with Teron Davenport of ESPN.com, with Joe Rexroad, excellent sports columnist for the Tennessean, both friends of the program, and Ryan Hurd, who is a musician, one of RCA's fine recording artists, the husband of Maren Morris. If you're not familiar with the work of Ryan Hurd, you should be. Ryan will be playing the draft stage Saturday, 9 a.m., at the draft experience stage at Nissan Stadium on day three. Ryan's got some interesting perspective to lend to all of this and will let us into what goes into the musical production of the draft. We'll break down prospects with Teron. We'll talk about storylines with our dear Lego-haired friend Joe Rexroad. We start, though, with Ryan Hurd, recording artist for RCA, and then we'll wrap things up with some stuff from the press conferences of John Robinson, Amy Adams-Strunk, and Mike Vrabel earlier today at St. Thomas Sports Park. But first, Ryan Hurd. We are thrilled to have Ryan Hurd, one of the fine recording artists over at RCA, at Ryan Hurd on Twitter. His latest EP, To a T, is available now. I'm partial to the title track, but Michigan for the Winner and Diamonds Are Twine are both excellent as well. Boss man, I appreciate you hopping on.
Thank you for having me, man. It's always cool when I get to talk about music and other stuff too. So this is really fun.
No, I'm so excited because this with this new gig that I've got going, Ryan, I get to wiggle around and kind of mix up sports and music, which I think is exactly what we're getting ready to have here in Nashville, yeah. Tennessee. It's at NFL Draft Week. Everybody's fired up. You're going to be playing Saturday, 9 a.m. Is when people can find you at the NFL Draft Experience stage outside Nissan Stadium. It's been crazy since the first of the month when the NFL contingent started moving in and started building up the draft stage on Lower Broad. How much different of an experience for you is this? Because I mean, you're living movie star rock star lifestyle. Okay, so the NFL draft probably not as big a deal to you as it is to the layman like us. But like, how much different of a feel for a performance is this for you?
Well, I did the NHL All-Star game. I did like a show with them, and it's not the same as like your own headline show or whatever, but it is cool to like get to be a part of something like the draft. I mean, it'll probably never come back to Nashville in my lifetime, so that's a really special thing to like get to be a part of something that like anyone who lives here and is a sports fan in this town will remember forever. So It's not quite the same to do a 9 a.m. set on Broadway than it is to do like your own headline show, but it's really cool to just, you know, have my name attached to it and to be able to participate in one way or another.
Yeah, of course. I mean, speaking of the All-Star game, did you happen, full disclosure, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, Ryan and I are taping this on Sunday after the Nashville Predators Game 5 loss to Dallas. Did you see Gavin DeGraw and the anthem?
I did, man. I talked to Marin about it too, because she's done the anthem. I kind of have a no anthem policy for me. It's like a no win, man.
Yeah.
Like if you do it right, you were supposed to do it right, and if you do it wrong, you're kind of.
Oh, you get dry, you turn into Gavin DeGraw, and I felt so
exactly.
bad for him.
And he's a nice guy, and we've met him, and he is a sweet, sweet human. And I remember watching him go backwards, like, uh oh,
here it comes.
And, you know, I feel so bad for that dude. And it looked like it hurts. I mean, anybody who's ever ice skated before, and A, you should appreciate people who can skate like NHL hockey players.
Right.
But number two, the next thing you know is how much it hurts to fall. So I'm sure that dude's got busted up knees, whatever today. I felt so bad.
So let's play this out hypothetically. If you're in that situation, how do you play it off? Do you just get up, walk off, not acknowledge it?
There's no way. I mean, you probably should tweet about it, but there's no way to play it off, man. You just I felt so bad for him. And he's a genuinely nice human. So, you know, he's just doing something for, you know, to be a part of it. And playoffs are awesome. And, you know, that's such a great
sure.
building to be in and to like, ah, man.
Well, it's the worst part of the internet, what happened to Gavin yesterday. But fortunately, because the internet is just filled with those kinds of things, it'll be forgotten in 2 days when the next foul up goes viral. So when the NFL sent us the email with the names of all the acts that would be performing throughout the course of the weekend and the week, because I mean this is a huge deal. What's happening in terms of the draft week and having the hockey playoffs at the same time and the rock and roll marathon at the end of the weekend, like it's going to be a beautiful disaster here in Nashville. Yeah. But the first thing I noticed when I was going through the names of the acts is how eclectic a group it was in terms of genre. I know people in Nashville are kind of, maybe not worried, but they are aware of the fact that they may be portrayed as more honky-tonk than Nashville actually sure. is. Are artists cognizant of that when you're getting ready to, you know, put on for our city, in essence?
Well, I don't think that I would think of it in that way just because there's a reason that I was booked. You know what I
sure.
mean? It means that there's a reason that they want me to come play. So I'll just go do my show. But I think that, you know, what they did a really good job of was showcasing, like, that this is not just, it's not Country Music City, it's Music City. And so having a band like Moon Taxi, which is like truly one of the best, I call them a jam band because that's when they started, that's what they were.
Mm.
But having somebody like that play, it's like open up the entire thing, and then having Dirks come and do it. And there's I can't remember all the acts in between, but I think they did a really good job of kind of including like a broader scope of what we do here, as opposed to just, I mean, they could have booked every single, you know, country artist that was around, you know what
oh,
I mean?
Sure.
But they went, made a conscious decision, and I think that was smart.
Yeah, I do as well. I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic. I don't know why people seem to go bent out of shape, because as long as the city's showcased, I mean, and showcased well, I don't really care if, I don't really
right.
care if there's too many cowboy boots or Daisy Dukes or whatever. They're showing too many neon lights. But, I mean, that's the foundation of Nashville. And like
yeah,
you
and
said, there's
like
a reason they're booking the acts that they are.
And that's the foot that, like, that's our best foot forward. That's what they've sort of chosen to be the face of our town to
sure.
someone visiting. So, you know, you kind of got to ride that out. I mean, to be honest, like, you know, we have a great downtown and there's a lot to do down there. And the draft stage is going to be amazing. And you'll be able to see that the stadium in the background and stuff like that. And, you know, I think when the NHL came and did the All-Star game here, it really was a giant moment for Nashville. And there was a lot of that honky-tonk stuff associated with it just because it's all right around the arena. But I think at the end of the day, like, they did such a good job of showing Nashville as a destination that it made, I mean, it just kind of like made it easy for the draft to come in and be like, all right, we'll just do that a little bit bigger. So I think they're going to lean a little bit on the honky-tonk thing because it's easy, but I don't think that's going to be the only thing that people see.
Yeah, no, my little sister, first time she's been down to Nashville for any extended period of time, she came down for a concert at the Cowan last night. She's 16 years old, so we're...
Who was at the Cowan? That's Topgolf, right?
Yeah, that's Topgolf, so it's Jack and Jack.
Unfamiliar
absolutely. With their work, but I dropped them off. I was playing personal Uber last night dropped them off, and there was just a line around the corner. They said they waited 45 minutes to get in. So Jack
There's
and Jack.
There's a kid that opened for them named Alec Bailey, and he's got this song called Lemonade.
Okay.
Which someone sent me the demo for that, but you should check that one out because it's not a country song. It's you know, kind of that singer-songwriter thing, but yeah, man, what the kids get into, it's crazy.
For sure, for sure. But anyway, we were taking around showing off everything that, like, the NFL is putting in, that, you know, the honky-tonks were, and we were able to walk her through a couple of them because it was during the day, and, you know, she's only getting ID'd if she gets a drink.
Sure.
But she was blown away by the scale and the scope of it. And it was a cool thing for me just to kind of like, oh, this is not normal everyday thing for people. You know, Nashville's lower Broadway is not a thing that everybody sees on their way to work every day like I do.
Exactly.
It was a cool moment for me just to kind of watch her experience everything that Nashville is. And I'm like, I have no big part in this. I just get to be around all the stuff that's going on. But I'm looking forward to seeing how people respond to what all we're about to do down here, because I think we're going to kick ass, Ryan. I don't know about you.
Well, we throw a good party, and we've always been good at that. So it's about to be. I mean, the draft just added another element of, you know, I guess what is it? It's going to be, is it end of April, and then we do CMA Fest in a month.
Oh yeah.
Then Bonnaroo, and which is I guess a little out of town, but it's that time of year, man. It's going to be wild.
So I know you're a native son of Michigan, correct?
Yes. Oh. In Chicago. I was born in Chicago.
Okay.
And then lived there as a kid and then grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Yeah.
So now, are you a local sports fan now that you're here in Nashville? Like, do you care about what the Titans are going to do?
I only care about the Titans, and I only care about the Preds. I'm a Braves fan, and then have recently rekindled my Cubs relationship. And but yeah, I'm all in Michigan football, basketball. But
okay.
When I got down here, I went to college at Belmont and got down here, and because I was split between, like, my friends were all Detroit fans.
Yeah.
My family's all Chicago fans. Like, what I was kind of in no man's land when I was a kid and just, like, you know, all sports. But got here and went to my first Preds game. It was actually against the Red Wings, and I was like, I like this better. So immediately jumped on the Preds, immediately jumped on the Titans. Just, I knew I was going to live here for a long time just because – I love, when I got to Nashville, I just fell in love with it. And so, yeah, I'm all Titans, all Preds.
So with the Titans, we'll get you out of here on this one because I've taken far too much of your time on Sunday when I know you just got off a tour bus. But I would be remiss if I didn't ask you how you felt about your team's chances this year, because nobody really seems to know what's going on with everything that swirls around Marcus Mariota from a day-to-day basis.
I like Marcus. I think he's great. Yeah. I wish that we could keep him standing up. But I think we're in sort of like a be careful what you wish for thing. Sort of like when, I don't know, I think if you move on from Marcus, you start over where you don't really – if you could just keep him standing up, he's probably going to win you some games, right? He's won 9 games 3 years in a row, right, or 2 years in a row?
3 years, so they've won 9 – they've had 3 consecutive winning seasons for the first time in the history of the franchise. And people just kind of sweep that under the rug.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that, and I think him adding weight is a big deal, but like, and I know that, you know, they're addressing the offensive line, but what that dude needs is like, he needs what the Chiefs have. He needs an Alvin, you know, he needs somebody who's explosive to do something with the ball other than him. So I love Derrick Henry, and I think if you can ride that out as long as you can, that's great. But, you know, Corey Davis is a great receiver, but where's the explosiveness on that offense? And that's what I'm excited about seeing, is if they can add somebody like that. I don't know if that guy is in the draft, but you would know more than I would. But that's what I'm excited about. And obviously they always need more pass rushing. So I think they're like one edge rusher away from really being able to make some noise.
Okay, so walk me through your emotions if they draft a center at the night with the 19th overall pick. Like, that's about as unsexy as it gets, but are you going to be good with that?
I mean, I don't know how to run a football team, so I guess I'll be fine with it. But I don't know. That would be really boring.
Yeah.
But I truly don't care as long as they win. So I mean, that if they draft a center, is there not a center that we could have grabbed in free? I don't know.
I mean, it's been a whole thing the way that they've handled this offseason.
Dude from North Carolina State, right? That's the guy that
Oh yeah, that's the big prospect. And you can tell how much or how weak the talent is in terms of the skill positions when everything that's being highlighted is offensive and defensive line play.
Sure.
That's what we have to look forward to.
I'm not a huge fan of those two receivers, those that are just shredded out of their mind. I don't think they can go left or right, but. If we ended up with an offensive line like the Colts have now, or an offensive line like Dallas had 2 years ago when they drafted Zach Martin, I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, anything to get that just one win over Andrew Luck. He's got that 11-0 record that just keeps rubbing Titans fans' nose
in. Did you tweet out that thing where it was like talking about the Colts schedule and it was like,
oh my God, yes, from Derek Schultz up in Indy.
Oh my gosh, and it's like week two win. And then it just went down. It's only the second, like, it's only May or whatever.
It's so not funny when you try to read it to people, because I died laughing reading the tweet. And then I'm, like, trying to describe it to people, and I just sound like a jackass. So
it is truly a bummer that they had Peyton Manning for however long they had him, and now they have this guy. Like, that, I was at Monday Night Football when Chris Johnson, like, ran wild, and we beat Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun. It was under the lights in Nashville. I was in college, and I am just so over the Colts destroying us every year.
I don't think you're alone, brother, and hopefully for Titans fans, they'll be able to do something in this upcoming draft this week to rectify the situation.
Sure. It felt good to have Jacksonville be Jacksonville again, though.
Oh, sure. I mean, are you scared of Nick Foles?
No.
No. I don't think anybody who's paid attention to how those Eagles teams were put together, truly, you know, Nick Foles getting paid a lot of money to not be that big of an upgrade over Blake Bortles.
What I'm hoping is that they paid him so much money that Jalen Ramsey comes home.
You think you so you want that?
I would love it.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think he'd be. He just got an attitude and. I don't know. Maybe you know more than I do, but I think that dude's a stud.
No, he's an absolute stud. See, I mean, and we can talk about this for hours, Ryan. I don't want to keep you too terribly long, but like with the Jalen Ramsey thing, I think people are so scared in football, especially of personality, that they are willing to just pass on it. What is a generational talent? I would say a cornerback, just because the dude's loud.
I think that's nonsense. I think he's like Taylor Lewan on defense, like. Taylor would probably be annoyed that I said that, but he's like the dude who's like bringing all the swag and all the attitude, and all he wants to do is be on a good team, I feel like, and a defense that, you know, cares about it as much as he does and wants to talk a little shit. Whatever, that's what I think.
No.
I think if you can back it up, it's great.
100%. I mean, and then you would get this. You would get to see the dynamic play out of Taylor Lewan and Jalen Ramsey reunited after that terrible flop Ramsey had when Lewan's playing the world's biggest, smallest violin.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing. I think it'd be great, and I think that they probably can't afford to re-sign him or don't want to, but somebody's going to do it, and why not us?
No question about it. He is Ryan Hurd. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Hurd. Make sure you check him out. He's playing at the NFL Draft Experience stage outside Nissan Stadium. 9 a.m. is when Ryan gets things started. I'll be out there before I have to shuffle on over to St. Thomas Sports Park and hunker down in that terrible little writer's room as they make the picks and put these poor bastards on conference calls with us afterwards. Ryan, I appreciate you stopping by, my brother. It was fun.
Cool, man. We'll have some tequila. It'll be good. It'll be 9 a.m. A little 9 a.m. Pick me up.
Hey, listen, brother, you are speaking my language. We will be sure to do that. Back here on the 615 Sessions, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports, Nashville.com. Getting ready to continue our draft coverage with a familiar face, a familiar hairdo, unfortunately, for us, and that is Joe Rexroad, friend of the program, excellent sports columnist for the Tennessean, if not excellent haircut. How are you, bud?
Hashtag Lego hair.
Yeah, I miss you.
My Yeah, go ahead. Rip on me. Go ahead.
Take it. Well, I won't rip on you because I'll let you do it yourself. Set the scene for me, as for the glamorous for the people listening who don't know what we in the sports media who lead such glamorous lives do for a living. Set the scene for me in your hotel room in Dallas as you prepare for Game 6 between the Predators and the Dallas Stars.
Well, okay. I'll give you the full rundown, Buck. Let's see. I am on my bed with my laptop on my lap, kind of using my large belly as a shelf.
Yes.
There's a little bit of a meatball sandwich stain on the T-shirt. I have been sitting here all day, just actually working on NFL draft stuff with this hockey game coming up. I also throughout my back the other day, like bending down in my kitchen to pick something up. My wife and daughter were both there, and we all heard like this crack. So like I have to sit in weird positions to not be in great pain. So there you go. The glamorous life of sports writing.
And you're at what some would consider to be the heights of the profession as a columnist for the paper of note in the state of Tennessee. Just Joe Rexroad living his best life. Nursing his thrown out back. God, you are sad. You know that?
No, it is awful. It is awful. I'm a pathetic person.
That's all right. I still love you, bud. And we'll talk a little bit about the hockey team before we wrap things up. But this is the draft preview show. One of the draft preview shows that we'll be pumping out for A to Z Sports. And we've just come from the Titans press conference, pre-draft press conference with John Robinson, Mike Vrabel, and controlling owner Amy Adams Strunk. Not a lot to be gleaned. We didn't exactly learn who they would be picking at 19. We just had it affirmed to us that this is, in fact, a deep defensive line class and that they will be taking the best player that fits their culture in their locker room, as if none of us know that before. But this is the same press conference that we've been having with them every time we meet with them before the draft. You are, however, high on, and not just you, but the need to address defensive line depth, be it edge rusher, be it interior, is something I think we can all agree that the Titans need to do. Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame is somebody that you seem to be particularly vocal about on Twitter, and I want to know if you're considering him at 19, and if so, why him instead of Christian Wilkins? Why him instead of Cleland Farrell, who appears to be dropping down the draft board? Guys like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, this is about because Sam Farmer from the LA Times, he does like sort of like a live mock draft. So I basically was forced to like make a choice here.
No. Sam don't hedge it. Don't hedge it.
Well,
like
I'm
that,
just
Rex
telling Rowe. You what I'm telling you what happened. I mean, he asked me to make the pick for the Titans, and I picked Tillery, and I'm trying to think. Yeah, I believe Christian Wilkins was still there. And look, man, I mean, to me, I like Tillery's length. I like his athleticism. I watched a lot of Notre Dame. I think I could really see him working with the Titans. I think he could be a great complement to Jarrell Casey. I don't have any compelling information to tell you why he's absolutely better than a Wilkins or a Farrell. And I think the bottom line is I think there's more edge guys you can get later maybe in this draft. I think there's a lot of depth there, but I think if, you know, the real mashers, and I think this team badly needs one and badly needed one all year to go with Casey. And, of course, when he was gone against the Colts, at times it looked like a, you know, like a really big mismatch up front in that game. Ugh. I just think that's a bigger priority. And I think all of it's a bigger priority than tight end or receiver or any of the other things people are throwing out there. So I'll be totally wrong. But I'm big on Tillery, and I don't quite understand why. Based on what I know of him, I'm surprised that he's projected by a lot of people as like a late first to second round pick. I think he's better than that.
I would be inclined to agree with you. What I see from him on tape, and just for the sake of argument, we'll make it like a Jared Stillman back and forth. I look at him on tape, and he is absolutely violent at the point of attack. He's got a great initial step. He is absolutely disruptive in a way that you need a guy, especially in the 2019 iteration of the NFL, where interior pressure seems to be more in vogue than maybe in years past because of the mobility of the quarterbacks, and that's just the fastest route to them. But I look at Tillery on film, and for as tantalizing a prospect as he is, there are times when he disappears. And Montez Sweat is somebody who has been accused of that, and you can see it a little bit on tape as well. And I try not to let the measurables and these things that come out during combines and pro days affect what I think of a prospect more than the tape. But I think he could be had later. And I could be wrong. This is just my initial look at him. And based on like what kind of player Christian Wilkins is, if he is in fact still on the board, what kind of character person he is. We know how much John Robinson and Mike Vrabel emphasize the building of locker room culture. And I mean, he just like Christian Wilkins on paper in terms of character and ability is a John Robinson wet dream as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Like I look at that. And he screams Tennessee Titan based on the players that we know. In the same way that you talked to Corey Davis at the Combine and you got that initial feeling, I remember you telling me, that this was somebody who fit their mold. That's the only reason that I would push back about, Jerry Tillery over Christian Wilkins in that particular instance.
Maybe I just don't think they'll ever draft another Clemson guy again. Who knows? But
Listen, if Twitter had anything to say about it, they sure as hell would not.
But no, I mean, point well taken on Wilkins and personality. And yeah, that's where it gets really interesting. I mean, even like, you know, it's where drafting is hard. I think of a guy like Rashawn Gary from Michigan. You know, this is a guy who I think if you watch enough tape of anyone, you'll see them quote unquote disappear at times. I mean, it's just, it's the game, you know, I mean, it's the nature of the game. It's hard for very few guys have the motor going at all times. Like Rashawn Gary is a guy who, by the measurables, is absolutely just—he's going to be a star.
Oh, he's a freak athlete.
He's a freak. He was the number one recruit in college football a few years ago. But like the production isn't there either, you know. And of course, he's had injuries too. I mean, he's one of those guys that is I think a top 10 type guy who could go at the top of the second round. You know, it's just really, and then of course Montez Sweat with the heart stuff. I mean, that's just really interesting. Is that guy going to end up falling down? And if you're the Titans and he's sitting there, what do you think about his situation? I'm seeing things today to the effect of some teams are completely freaked out and scared away from him, and some teams are like, yeah, I'll be fine, yearly checkup. So I mean, it's going to be really interesting just with that, you know, that position group alone in this draft.
Yeah, Matt Miller of Bleacher Report had the tweet earlier today. Montez Sweat stock bottomed out due to team medicals. Have heard from a few clubs that have him off the board. Of course, it only takes one team, but the expectation now is he will drop, could fall out of round one. That's Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout on Twitter. I look at it the same way that I look at the Harold Landry situation a year ago, where if you have the ability to get a player who has that much potential but is being – with Landry, it was, I believe, ankle issues, if I remember correctly. Sweat, obviously, the enlarged heart is a much different situation, and it would be negligent of us to debate, you know, how much it could actually affect him when we have no medical degrees between us. I can't help but think – that somebody like that is not going to fall all the way out of the first round, Joe. I mean, this dude was a pterodactyl at the combine. Like, I know I just talked about not letting the measurables affect it, but he is – Cleveland Farrell would be a top 10 pick in any other year that didn't have Montez Sweat in it because the athletes are so outrageous this year.
Yeah, well, and Sweat's film backs him up too.
Sure.
I mean, again, like you said, okay, maybe he disappears at times, but I mean, if you watched any Mississippi State football last year, I mean – you know, the absolute best of the best team struggled to block him. Other NFL guys struggled to block him. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, I mean, it's, you know, those things are always a risk. But if he's cleared, you know, to play, I have a hard time thinking everyone's going to be scared of him. But, hey, it still could mean a substantial drop. And who knows, maybe he'd be there for the Titans. I don't know if he's quite, you know, you mentioned the John, quote unquote, John Robinson kind of guy. And I don't know if Montez Sweat would fall into that category, but he'd be awfully intriguing because he is, I think, again, unless this really derails him, I think he's going to be a difference maker in the league.
I don't think there's any question about it. And it was just curious to say. And there's always, of course, this is lying season. So the internet is proliferated with these kind of things at this time of year, be it from teams that are leaking the information to try and get the player to fall to them wherever they're picking and things of that nature. But let's talk a little bit about storylines, seeing as you are a wordsmith painting pictures from your hotel room in a meatball sub-stained shirt. John Robinson, this isn't a sexy draft by any means. Positionally, when you look at the players, like the high-end pass rushers are great and everybody wants one in the NFL. But in terms of, like, Kyler Murray, I guess, is a big deal. But the rest of it is really not that intriguing to the average NFL fan, except if you're a Titans fan. Because you sit here, you look at where they're picking, you look at what they need, you look at the situation surrounding them where we have no idea how the draft board is going to break, particularly in the first round with the quarterbacks. And you have so many more needs than you initially thought you had. 19 seems like a weird spot for you to have to make something out of when most of the impact players one would think would be gone, and you're looking at that point for a player that would be more of a 10-year or just a long-term solution, a good, solid football player that can be a member, a contributor for a long time. I look at John Robinson's aggressiveness last year, where he walks into the draft with 6 picks, walks out of the draft with 4 draft picks, one who didn't make the roster. And I feel like they're in kind of a precarious position with everything else that swirls around it. Of course, Marcus Mariota's health, all the other things we've talked about ad nauseum. What do you think that the implications of this particular draft will be for John Robinson's storyline as the general manager of the Tennessee Titans?
Well, I mean, look, they're all important. But I feel like, you know, he has certainly established himself as a guy who has, in pretty short order, turned around this franchise from awful to solid, you know, 3 straight 9-7 seasons. You can go back through his picks. And of course, we've already referenced Kevin Dodd, and he's had a couple donut holes, and he's had a lot of good picks. Overall, you know, he's improved the roster, but I mean, if the whole good to great thing, you know, I think this draft has to be part of that. I mean, I don't see how they go from good to great next year if there aren't a couple immediate impact guys out of this draft. And I don't think that just because you're at 19, that means you can't get one. I mean, I think you can. You know, I mean, Kevin Byard was a immediate impact guy in the third round. I mean, you got to make the right picks. To me, when I look at this team, I think this season is, to a large extent, is a gamble on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, I don't see how you get around that. You are gambling on Mariota, and of course, you're also trying to figure out his long-term situation. But it is a gamble that, that he's the guy who can do it for you. That Delanie Walker is going to come back healthy, that, Jack Conklin's coming back healthy, that Corey Davis is going to continue progressing. There's a lot of things that you have to just with on individual improvement things and health things that have to break right for this team. You can't address everything. So to me, that's why I look at this draft as you have a defense that's good to very good. But if you got a couple perfect pieces in the right places to go with what you have in the back seven, you could make a great defense out of that. And then how much does that impact everything else? You know, of course they're not just going to draft defense, but to me that should be the priority. I strongly believe that. I think that you take what you have that you know is good, and if you have a chance to make it great, there is where you do that. And the other side of the ball is largely going to be, you know, just hoping that it all works out. If that makes any sense to you. I mean, it's like you can't address everything.
And it's totally fair because we have no idea what the offense is going to look like because we have no idea what the quarterback is going to look like. Like all of this swirls around the Tennessee Titans because it's just so much unknown with whether he's going to be able to sustain whatever spine issue, nerve issue that he was dealing with. And if it's just going to take one more hit, like what he experienced in the season opener last uh, last year to totally derail a football team that should be, I think by anybody's measurements, competitive in 2019. I don't know what you do, but you're exactly right in terms of they need to hit on some kind of impact defender, because they can't finish the year with 39 sacks in the defense that they have on paper. It's just not feasible in the way that teams are throwing the football around in 2019. Before we get you out of here, you are in Dallas. You are there for Game 6 of the Nashville Predators and the Dallas Stars. The Preds down 3-2. They've gotten their teeth kicked in the past two, and it's been fascinating to watch because they are uber talented, and yet on a night-by-night basis, you have no idea what you're going to get, which has been the narrative of the whole season. But they've looked simply inferior, Joe, and I don't understand why. Like, I'm not smart enough to understand why. I'm asking you, mighty wordsmith, why the hockey team is broken.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it's a little bit chicken and egg with this, with the whole first line for Dallas, because if you're the Predators, and Peter Laviolette came right out with this after Game 5, I mean, you could sit there and say, yeah, their first line looks great, but the Predators are saying, hey, they also look great when we give them the puck and say, here you go. Here's the puck, and there's the net. Why don't you go ahead and score? And that definitely happened a couple times. There's some just ridiculous mistakes being made by the Predators, you know, really in 4 and 5, inexcusable, stupid, ridiculous mistakes. However, I also think that when a line like that in particular, but not just that line, really their top two lines, when they are establishing the forecheck the way they have, and they are in your face like that and cycling and exhausting you, and you are starting to feel helpless, that's when you make more mistakes, you know? And so I think they go hand in hand. I think some of these mistakes that you can call them unforced, but I think they're still situational. I think they're related to what Dallas has been able to do to the Predators and establish. I mean, look, I came away from that game saying I think they're done, which is always a dangerous way to think about any hockey team in this tournament.
Sure.
But I think in particular with the Predators, I mean, it was just a year ago. They were done. They got smoked at home by Winnipeg, and they went down there and completely stifled them in Game 6. Now, of course, then they came home and got destroyed in Game 7, but yep, they did win the Game 6. So, I think the Predators, I think they've suffered. You know, you can't have that bad of a power play. You can't have a second line that's just, you keep trying new combinations. Your second line center, Kyle Turris, has not been what you need him to be. There's a lot, and some of your defensemen, Matthias Ekholm's having a horrible series. Ryan Ellis, to me, looks like a shell of what he used to be. So, I mean, a lot of this, yeah, they're still uber talented, but a lot of those guys are not playing at their peak for whatever reason. And so, so we'll see at the Stanley Cup final after they turn this all around. And, you know, I mean, I have no idea what to expect, but it doesn't look good. It didn't look good for them coming out of Game 5.
No, it didn't. And by the time this airs on Tuesday morning, we will find out whether they have been eliminated or whether they live to die another day, just like the 2018 Titans. That felt like the narrative all year long. They keep doing just enough to keep dragging themselves to the finish line, but we'll find out later this evening. Joe Rexroad, sports columnist for the Tennessee, and you can follow him on Twitter at Joe Rexroad. You can read him, of course, in the paper or online at Tennessean.com. Rexroad, you were okay on your inaugural appearance on the new pod, but we'll think about having you back.
All right. Well, next time I'll do it shirtless. Have you?
I was about to say, do you even have pants on?
I do have pants on.
Oh,
yes, I do. Yes. And they're zipped and everything. have you annoyed and alienated all your new coworkers yet, or is that still a couple weeks away?
Oh, no. That literally the minute that I walked into that introductory video and kind of, you know, muscled both of them out of the shot, they realized what grave mistake they had made. and realized that I'm now their headache rather than 102.5 the game. So lucky them.
Oh, it's going to be fun to watch.
Some people just like to watch the world burn, Joe. I'm one of them. Back here on the 615 Sessions, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville. NFLDraft.com, continuing one of two mega draft pods that we will be putting out for you over the course of this week as the Tennessee Titans prepare to make their pick in the first round on Thursday. 19th overall is when they will make the selection. Joining us now, good friend of the program, longtime friend of mine, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation's Titans reporter. Talking TD is the podcast. You can find it on thegamenashville.com. Make sure that you are throwing my man ratings, reviews, subscriptions, whatever it is that you can do to support the product that our friend is putting out. TD, what's going on?
What's up, man? The 615 is live, I see.
Indeed. We know that the 615 is live and that TD is for the people. That is the only thing that we know in this world.
That's right.
So let's talk about the players that the Tennessee Titans, the positions that the Tennessee Titans need to address, and the players that will be available to them, because those are two very different things, Teron, as we well know. 19 is a weird spot for them to be picking. We know they need trench players, regardless of whether it's outside linebacker, whether it's interior defensive line or interior offensive line. The Montez Sweat news from Matt Miller of Bleacher Report was interesting to me today. Do you think there's any chance that he legitimately falls out of the first round?
I highly doubt he falls out of the first round, but I will say this. He is off of certain teams' draft boards, and I actually did a feature on Montez a couple weeks ago, and it was really something that they were guarding against, and it just – you know, sometimes
they as in his camp, his representation.
Yeah. It was something that his camp, you know, his agent, Brian Overstreet and Rodney Williams, they were doing a really good job of just kind of, it is what it is. Right. But they were doing a good job of just trying to control it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just interesting because this information has been out there for a while. I don't really know why it's something that the week of the draft is being trumpeted, and it's so unfortunate for this kid because in doing the research and talking to his trainer from Exos, Brent Callaway, and talking to Chuck Smith, a guy who helped him develop more pass rushing moves going into the draft.
Down in Atlanta, we know Chuck well, for sure.
Yeah. Chuck's a good dude, man, and he's so excited about Montez. And seeing all that and hearing the energy when these guys talk about him, and even in talking to Montez himself, you know, everybody on this side of things are just like, he works so hard, right? And you hate to see information being brought out so late and the week of the comp. Like, the week of the draft is just, it's disheartening, you know what I mean? But it's something that has been known since, you know, after the combine.
Oh, sure. And I mean, you said that you don't know why it's being floated at this time of year, at this particular Monday of NFL draft week, and I have a pretty good inclination that it wouldn't be out there if somebody wasn't trying to tank this young man's draft stock, and maybe get him at a later pick than he might otherwise have been available at, which is just, it's the gross part, or one of the gross parts of football as an industry. It is very much the lying season and the proliferation of these nasty things that can legitimately impact these young men financially, and it really is a shame for both him and somebody like Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, his teammate who dealt with the ACL injury and has had his draft stock impacted by that. But we know that they need defensive line help. We know that they need interior offensive line. What we'll do here is I'll go position by position. I'll let you make the pick that you think makes the most sense for them at each position, assuming that they'll be available. So let's start with outside linebacker. Is there any particular player that strikes your fancy if he is available at 19?
Yeah, I think really, and it's funny because last week on Twitter, we had different conversations about this guy. But I think really if Brian Burns is there at 19, looking at the outside linebackers that I think are going to be there, I think he's the best of them. And when you look at Burns, obviously we have the weight issue, right? But if you go back and you look at some of his games, I mean, you could take bad film of everybody, even Kevin Byard, and say, oh, well, he can't do this. You know, you could take one or two plays.
As if a football player has never had a bad play to be highlighted.
Exactly. So that's – I have to say that because I know that people like to put random plays up and say, oh, well, see, he can't do it because of this. But at the same time, if you take – even in that same game, someone posted something of Brian Burns getting driven to the ground, getting pancaked. But they didn't post the other times in that game where he had tackles for loss, right? So
right.
I say all that to say he's a guy that because of the way he uses his hands, because of the way he converts speed to power, because of his quickness and his you know, loose hips, et cetera, he is someone that can elude blockers against the run. Now, when you're talking about going against the pass and going and attacking that quarterback, that dude's spin move is Dwight Freeney-like. You know what I mean? And then he has the audacity to work on a fake one, you know, that he's bringing in too. So now it's like you got a guy getting better and better as far as a pass rusher. He was able to put on those pounds. It's something that a lot of the guys that I talked to, they said they talked to Marcus Davenport, you know, the guy I call Little Cuz. There's no real relation, but. You know, he's someone that put on.
Have to stick together. You, Don.
That's right, man. It's not. There aren't many of us, man. You know, but he talked to him about putting on weight and maintaining speed, and that's something that he was able to do. Obviously, I don't think it's something that he's going to carry all the way through the season. You know, staying at 250. But I mean, if you're going from 225 up to 250 and maintaining 240, I think that's winning. So, long story short. You get a guy that can come in there and immediately impact the quarterback as far as getting pressure from the opposite side. So now that makes a guy that you look at as your top defensive player in Jarrell Casey. That makes him better because you got the outside coming. Quarterback has to step up. Guess who's sitting there waiting? It's just like, you know, lions attacking antelopes. You know what I mean? It's the gazelles. It's we got someone to chase. And then you got someone that could go and make the kill. And then not to mention if they get a guy a little bit later, you know, whether it be Colin Saunders or you know, one of those type of guys to pair up with Jarrell Casey, they're in a good situation. So Brian Burns, I think, is an excellent pick.
10 sacks, 15 and a half tackles for loss for Brian Burns at Florida State. Yeah, the weight thing, because you and I did have a discussion about this on Twitter at TD, or excuse me, let me make sure I have the Twitter handle correct, at Teron, no, damn. Teron, what's your Twitter handle? At T Davenport underscore NFL. Yeah. My God, I don't know why that was so hard for me. And me out here doing actual, you know, preparation for a show would be nice for once instead of just pulling it up on the fly. But yeah.
Hey, man, we tweet back and forth all the time. So now you just put TD in and the rest of it comes up. So you don't have to know it all.
At T Davenport underscore NFL is where you find my man TD. We were talking about Burns on Twitter because the weight thing was something that I brought up just because for the same reason that I bring up Hollywood Brown and his weight. Mm. And obviously that's a much, much different situation. There's a big difference between 250 pounds and 166 pounds like Hollywood Brown is. But it's something for me that I worry about the durability. I know that injuries are not something that has plagued him, but I know how difficult it is to adjust to the NFL game. It's so much more different than college, even as you are facing NFL caliber talent in the ACC playing for Florida State. I just worry about him being able to sustain. But like you said, the film is everything that you need to know. It's tough to not get distracted, or at least it's tough for me because I have the attention span of a small rodent to not get distracted by the measurables and not just apply what I'm seeing on film. But Brian Burns, I think the Titans would be thrilled to have at number 19. Let's go interior offensive line because we know that the Titans signed Roger Saffold away from the Los Angeles Rams for a big money contract. Ben Jones, final year of his deal. He hasn't played quite the level of football that he has in years past. Quentin Spain was allowed to walk, and Josh Klein got cut. If you are looking at interior offensive line, the two names that have been trumpeted, heralded almost, in a way that offensive linemen often aren't, but this is the year for them, are Eric McCoy and Garrett Bradbury. Which between the two of them do you think makes the most sense if they are going to draft a center at 19?
You know, for me, that's like a Lamborghini versus a Ferrari, you know what I mean? Because I think both of them are really good options. I kind of shifted later in the process, just after watching a little bit more of McCoy, specifically watching McCoy against Alabama and Quinnen Williams, you know, because I went back to watch Alabama because I wanted to get a little more insight on Isaiah Bugs, right, a later guy. And I kept saying, wow, McCoy is – he's handling Quinnen Williams, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really doing his thing against
him. Yeah, we were watching. I was watching a little bit of tape with you in the writer's room at the Titans facility, and it was very evident that McCoy could hold
exactly,
his own.
Exactly. So it was right around then, and I started saying, well, you know what? Let me go back and rewatch Bradbury against Clemson, and then rewatch McCoy against Clemson. And I'm like, Eric McCoy is the dude. Yeah. You know, but I think either one of those guys, you bring them in, and they're literally plug and play. So I think that those are guys that should be the top at the top of the interior offensive line side of things, just because now you could move Ben Jones over to right guard, right? And the thing that I like about that situation is, you know, Ben Jones is in the final year of his contract, right? So if you decide that you want to move on from Ben Jones after this season, you don't have to move on and just plug a new center in. You could plug the center in right there, and he's playing alongside Ben Jones, right? A guy who played center for this team for quite some time. So all the calls and stuff, he'll have somebody to bounce it off of right then and there when he needs to be able to do that, right? And then it's always easier to fill in a guard, and you could get a guard a little bit later, like a guy like Nate Davis that they really like. You could get him, and you could have him be a reserve in his rookie year and then come in and be the starter in the second year. So to me, the transition is a lot smoother when you have a rookie center and you put him in the mix. Like, it's very difficult. People talk about receiver being in a difficult position to adjust to the NFL. And well, I tell you what, when you're going from college to the NFL as a center, man, it's a lot different, because now every single time you set foot on the field, you're going against someone that will eat your lunch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas you're not always the lunch eater like you were in college. So it's a big shift. And then on top of that, you have to be able to process stuff and still play fast, especially in this zone scheme where you're making decisions on the fly. So I think having one of those rookie guys come in and play alongside Ben Jones would be very beneficial. Like I said, you could have the rookie step in, and then you also have Ponfield there that could be a depth option also.
And I think the mental aspect of the game for a center is so underrated, because and I don't want to just lump all fans in, but this is something that anybody who pays attention to football falls into the trap of you know, realizing that it's not actually Madden and you can't just plug this dude in because you drafted a center, and the center should automatically be able to handle the protections and a lot, and make sure that everybody is in the right position, make the calls and do everything that is required pre-snap in a way that people hugely underrate Ben Jones's ability to do. This is not just because he has not held up physically, does not mean that Ben Jones is not a very mentally adept player at that position, and it's why they've been so hesitant to move him around, because it's so underrated, that relationship between he and the quarterback and Ben Jones's ability to process and make the correct calls and make sure that they are in the right protections.
Yeah, 100%, and that's so key. And then the other thing to look at, I mean, let's say now that we've done everything to sell the two centers, let's say they don't go that route, right? You could kind of do the reverse, because there's a guy out of Georgia, Lamont Galliard, who I think is a really good fit. And he, out of the three guys, in my opinion, is the most like Jason Kelce, who I'll say is the best zone blocking center in the history of the NFL. You know what I mean?
In the history of the sport.
In the history of the sport. Just go watch Jason Kelce, man, a little bit more closely.
I'm not saying
you personally, I'm just saying anybody, you know, go watch him. You really will appreciate. I mean, there are times where you see this guy pull to and he gets to that second level and you see him block the kick out the outside linebacker and then go up and dig out a safety, and you'll see the running back, you know, a lot of these Jay Ajayi runs that he had were on the result of Kelce getting two blocks. But Jay Ajayi has like a 75 rating in Madden. You know what I mean? As far as speed is concerned.
No,
so you'll see the linebacker.
Damn it,
from the
I'm trying
side.
To get these people away from Madden, and you go ahead and make a Madden rating comparison. What are you doing?
Oh man, you know it's all part of the jokes. You know, you gotta speak the people's lingo. That's part of being for the people, right?
TV,
you gotta speak their lingo,
for
man.
The people, no
you
doubt
know
about it.
So, but yeah, I think Galliard is somebody that you kind of do the reverse with, right? And then what you do is you get a guy like a Chris Lindstrom early, Drew Samia, Ben Powers. You know, Drew Samia and Powers are guys that I had on talking with TD, and they told me that there was a lot of interest from the Titans. And if you look at their personalities, like, these are nasty dudes. And that's something that, you know, you don't have to worry about plays after the huddle, you know, I mean, after the whistle, bad plays as far as extracurricular stuff. But from whistle to whistle, those dudes, they're going hard. Watch the Texas game. You'll see both of those guys just pulling and kicking out and just dominating. And it's almost like, you know, double teaming guys and driving them to the ground, going back to the huddle and sharing pancake stories and laughing about it. You know what I mean? And so you could go guards earlier if you want to do that. I'm talking about at 51 and then come back and go center later. So there's you can flip-flop it either way, but it's mandatory that they address one of those two positions, and if not, both of them, in my opinion, at some point in the draft.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I don't know how they feel about Kevin Pomphiel, Corey Levin, and Aaron Stinney, but I at the very least, for the sake of depth, interior offensive line is something that the Titans need to look at coming up in this week's NFL draft. Now, the pick for me at number 19, if he is available, I think without question, is Christian Wilkins, the defensive tackle out of Clemson. Character-wise, he is exactly what John Robinson and Mike Vrabel look for in an athlete. He is somebody who is much more than just a football player, but he is also an incredibly disruptive presence on the interior of the defensive line, and somebody who I think can legitimately make an impact next to Jarrell Casey in a way that Daquan Jones and Austin Johnson and Benny Logan, for that matter, before he was he did not re-sign with the team after 1 year with them, in a way that those other guys have not been able to. And that's something they desperately need in this version of the NFL where interior pressure is so important because of the mobility of the quarterbacks that are coming in, and that's the fastest route to them is right up the middle. Tell me why. Give me a reason, if you can, that I should not be in love with Christian Wilkins at 19.
I don't really think there is a reason. And, I mean, if you're asking me, a guy, a D-tackle that they should pick, I think Wilkins is the guy because when you look at him, this is someone who could play from 0 to 9. Right. Let's say for some reason they decided they wanted to play that wide nine at a certain time. He could go out and play that position and do it well. He could even stand up and rush the passer as a stand up outside linebacker.
You've seen Jarrell Casey do it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're getting someone who's very much like him. Again, I mentioned Colin Saunders. He's someone you could get a little bit later that does a lot of similar things. But Christian Wilkins, for me, when I look at him, he's so disruptive. And if you have two blue chip guys in the middle of that defense, one of the things, remember at the press conference, I asked Kevin Byard about the importance of being strong up the middle.
Yes.
That's mandatory. So if you got two guys just collapsing the pocket and pushing it back to the quarterback's face, now there are throws that he would like to be able to really step into that he can't because you got the guard and center getting pushed back, smoothly escorted back into his lap, and he can't step into those throws because he has to worry about hitting his hand on the guard or center's helmet. So it may not always equal sacks, but it's going to equal other things like overthrows from not being able to follow through. Now Adoree Jackson could get an interception. Now Kevin Byard could get interceptions. It's going to lead to throws being inaccurate, right, and just not being on target. So now when Adoree Jackson gets beat, or if he should get beat on a play, that receiver that's open, he can't get connected to because the throw was Aaron. So there's bigger things that a guy like Christian Wilkins brings to the table that you have to consider. And then even against the run, man, like you think back to that Redskins game when Adrian Peterson was just like, you know, he was beeping the horn. You know, he was on the ludicrous
stuff.
I've
never seen anything like that in my life, Teron. This man is old enough to be my father, and he's out here just trucking dudes as if it was his first year in the league again. I mean, Adrian Peterson is a marvel of modern science, honest to God.
Yeah, for sure. So when you have guys like Wilkins, you know, that helps fight that. So I definitely think he's someone that should be of you know, very, very high consideration for them.
If not Wilkins, then whom?
At D tackle?
Mm.
Or just overall?
At D tackle, just because, well, I mean, at D tackle, just for the sake of conversation, because, I mean, from what I hear and from what I understand, I'm sure you're seeing the same stuff. It sounds like people are a lot higher on Christian Wilkins than might otherwise be for your typical defensive tackle, especially in this year's draft. So I'm of the impression that he may not be there. So if he is not there, who do you think they should look at next down the line?
I'll tell you who, and I'll say the name, and a lot of people are going to be like, huh? Jerry Tillery, man.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. Watch that Stanford, Michigan, and most of his stats were in those two games, but there are other games where he had impact, right? But if you watch those two games, you're just like, wow, man, this dude right here is a force. And for people who have watched the NFL for a little bit longer, you know, one of the comps that I keep getting when I talk to people about analysts about Jerry Tillery is Richard Seymour, who was one of the best players in Dean Pease's defense when he was in New England.
With the Pats, for sure.
Richard Seymour, right? So you're getting that comparison. Now, for people who are a little more, you know, just starting to really get deep into it, think of a guy like Buckner on the 49ers.
DeForest.
You know, a tall guy, DeForest Buckner, tall guy that just pushes the pocket, uses his length and power, and just completely obliterates guards. That's what Jerry Tillery does. And that Stanford team has some really good guards on that team. You know, some guys that will get drafted. So when I look at Tillery, not only is he someone that could get that pressure, but he's someone that at 6'6", with 84.5-inch wingspan, he could definitely make it a lot harder for quarterbacks to find those passing lanes also. So that's going to help those quick plays. I mean, we know, you know, the Titans play a lot of off, so those slants work against them. So that could help in that aspect, too. I think Tillery is a guy that is definitely someone that they like. He was here in Nashville, you know, visiting last week. He's someone that they've met with throughout the process. I know you got a little extracurricular stuff with him.
A little bit.
As far as, like, you know, stomping a guy after a play, and that may not jive with them completely. But he supposedly has matured over this past year. And I think that's something that definitely is a result of him doing things outside of football, whether it be traveling. It's funny, I had him on the show, and we were talking Japanese back and forth. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he's kind of like the Dos Equis man. You know, he's into everything. But at the same time, he's a really good football player. So I think that's what matters the most. And he's someone that will be there at 19, especially even if they decide they want to trade back a little bit. I think he'll be there so they could acquire another pick and, you know, still get a guy that could be a force. And he could play from 0 to 5 technique for you. And that's useful to have in that Titans scheme.
Multiplicity drink, if you've heard that word at the Titans facility.
Yeah, right.
He is Teron Davenport at @TDavenport_NFL. I got it right that time. You can check out the podcast Talking with TD for all his draft conversations, all his insights and analysis. It is available at thegamenashville.com. Be sure to keep up with everything that TD is doing throughout the draft process and moving forward into this 2019 season. Boss man, I appreciate you making your inaugural appearance on the 615 Sessions, and happy to talk a little shop as always.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Thanks for having me, and, you know, it's going to be interesting. Let's gear up for it.
Back here on the 615 Sessions, Buck Rising here with you. Appreciate our guest, Ryan Hurd, Teron Davenport, and Joe Rexroad for stopping by. Just wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the press conferences, the pre-draft press conferences that were held over at St. Thomas Sports Park. And I mean, there really wasn't a ton to be gleaned out of these things. It's not exactly like they told us who they would be picking at 19. It was the typical generalities and cliches that one would come to expect. And prepared statement, of course, by Amy before the press conference officially got started and they started fielding questions from us. But one thing in particular stood out, and I believe it was Zach Bingham, of course, who you can see on A to Z Sports in the morning, 8 a.m. weekdays with Austin Stanley, is where we have our live streaming Periscope and Facebook show. Austin, or rather Zach asked him, I bet they get that all the time. Zach asked John Robinson if there was a particular emphasis heading into this year's draft about building the team to cater to and better maximize Marcus Mariota, which has been the theme since Mike Mularkey and his staff was fired. Now, John Robinson did what John Robinson should have done, which was couch it and make sure that he made it about the team. But this was John Robinson today at St. Thomas Sports Park.
I mean, I think every draft is you're trying to help the team. You know, there's 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and we put 11 at a time out there in the kicking game. And we're trying to add players to help the team. Marcus is an important part of this team. I think that's our charge, is to do our due diligence and get to know these prospects and evaluate them. And again, I keep coming back to building that profile of the player and seeing if they're going to come in here and help the Tennessee Titans.
Now, in any other situation, there would be nothing that we could glean from that particular soundbite. But I do find it interesting, the more that we look at Marcus Mariota's contract situation and the more that you consider where they are. They're in a really precarious position. This is not a draft. This is not a year, really, outside of the Kyler Murray stuff, because that's a novelty in itself. But this is a draft that nationally, and really on the whole, does not contain a lot of sex appeal, right? It's offensive and defensive line. Those are the positions of strength. That's not real. I mean, it's fundamentally sound ways to building a football team, but it's not exactly the flash in the pan that people would want out of the NFL draft. You look, though, at Marcus Mariota, at the Titans, how things could break before they get ready to make their first-round pick, if they do, in fact, stay at 19. And I would very much imagine that John Robinson would not be willing to trade up, given the amount of draft capital they've already expended last offseason, and to trade away next year's fourth-round pick for Ryan Tannehill, and already to have given the sixth-round pick up in this year's draft for Kamalai Correa, the pass rusher they acquired from Baltimore. It's a situation where you really don't know what they're going to do, because you have no idea whether, as we've talked about with Joe Rexroad and Ryan Hurd and Teron Davenport, you have no idea if any of these pass rushers, who the team desperately needs, are going to be available at 19. You may end up with a center. You may end up with a guard. And that would be hugely beneficial in the long run, because it would help to keep Marcus Mariota upright. But they have to prepare for the future as well. And I don't know necessarily, and it's not like John Robinson's going to come out and give some ringing endorsement for a quarterback that they have not yet extended in a contract year, whose health situation is uncertain. But the more that you look at the Marcus Mariota situation, the more that you realize that they simply have to hedge their bets. And that this, my assumption, which is probably not a fair one, but my assumption that they have been in win-now mode with Marcus Mariota as the quarterback on the five-year plan that you typically get with a rookie first-round quarterback whose contract is manageable in terms of salary cap, that makes these things more maneuverable to where you can put different kinds of parts around him. They have to prepare for the possibility that Marcus Mariota may not be their quarterback in 2020. You don't know. It's difficult to say, right? Because you don't know whether, okay, should we go ahead and build this thing around him? Should we make this thing work as much as we possibly can with him, even if he may be limited, even if he may be in a diminished state from the player that was drafted in 2015 with the second overall pick? I don't know how it breaks. We don't know how the quarterbacks are going to go. We don't know how the edge rushers will go. We don't know where DK Metcalf will fall into these things. Hollywood Brown is another name of note who seems to be gaining more traction as the days wane on, as we get nearer and nearer to the first round on Thursday on Lower Broad. But I sit here looking at the statements that were made today, at the totality, if you will, of the Tennessee Titans situation, and I feel like there are more questions than answers. And perhaps that's the state of every team at this time of year, until you physically have the players who you're going to move forward into that particular season with. But there's so much uncertainty that swirls around the Tennessee Titans, and I don't know if it's resolved simply by this draft, because you have no idea whether Marcus Mariota is going to be able to hold up for 16 games. You don't know if Marcus Mariota is going to be able to hold up for 13 games, as he didn't make a full, again, for the fourth straight year, did not make a full 16-game start as the franchise or as the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. He hasn't done it yet in his career. This is something that we all know well by now. We'll see how it goes as we get closer and closer. But that is going to do it for this Tuesday edition of the 615 Sessions. We will be back in your feed on Wednesday morning. We're going to have a quick turnaround on these podcasts so that you have more time to listen to them before the actual picks are made on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And, by the way, if you would like more exposure to me than you are already getting, you're probably tired of me by now. But this is, you shouldn't be. This is only the second episode, and we're just getting to know each other. Don't go away so soon. But if you would like more exposure to Tennessee Titans draft coverage, to NFL draft coverage in general, I am very, very pleased to announce that I will be a part of the Day 3 ESPN Periscope Draft Show with our dear friend Jason Fitz of ESPN. He has been kind enough to invite me alongside his co-hosts, Mina Kimes, Field Yates, Dominique Foxworth, and Mike Golic Jr. I will be stopping by for a little bit, at least, on their Periscope live show from Nissan Stadium on Day 3 of the draft. That's Saturday, so make sure that you are checking that out on all of your streaming services as well. In the meantime, this is Buck Rising, and reminding you to stay hot, Nashville. We'll talk to you Wednesday, right here on the 615 Sessions, presented by A to Z Sports.